And greetings, everyone. You're listening to the PNB Programming Committee for February 5th, 2019. I am Catherine Davis, Chair, our Vice Chair, Eric Ramey, and Secretary, Jim Dingman. I'm going to call the roll. Grace Aaron?
Here.
Ken Aaron?
Here.
Catherine Davis? Present. Benito Diaz?
Present.
James Dingman? Anissa Faruqi? Steve Pride?
Here.
Eric Ramey?
Present.
Murray Cliff Smith, Tom Voorhees.
Here.
Welcome, Tom. So we have quorum, and so and I do believe Jim will be calling back in. Our proposed agenda for today is roll call, which is not appointed timekeeper. Hello? Who's called in? Who can be timekeeper today?
I'll just stay on. It'll be okay. I'll stay on.
Okay. Approve the minutes.
Hello,
who's that? Who just called in?
Ken, I just switched phones.
Oh, okay. All right. I don't have any. I didn't see any minutes. Did anyone see minutes? So I don't know if you have any.
I got some. I did. I believe I did. I got an email at the word minutes there. I didn't read the entire thing. I believe I did get them.
Okay.
Did you want me to go get them and send them out? I'm sorry.
If you could, that would be great.
Okay.
Report on status of the motions by the chair. Changes or additions to the agenda. Motions for consideration and adjourn at 11. Are there any changes for consideration?
Now, this is Ken. I'd like to say something about that.
Changes to the agenda. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. As I have heard, the PNB just approved the handbook for employees, and it has significant sections, or it's some impact on programmers and program directors. And since that's been approved by the PNB, I think we should, it hasn't been distributed yet, but I know there's a couple of people who are on the PNB as part of this committee. I think since it's policy, we should review those parts of it that apply to programmers and discuss how we can get them implemented. Because I think that's much closer to the bone. Because it's already been approved policy, and I consider a lot of them a significant implementations. So I'd like to add a discussion of impact of the Pacifica Employee Handbook section on programming. And
okay,
I will try to extract that and email it to the committee.
Okay, so impact of handbook on programming.
Catherine, apparently that was something else. It looks like I don't have them.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to refer postpone the minutes. I'll put in postpone approval of minutes.
Anissa to the room.
Who's this?
Anissa.
Anissa, okay. Welcome, Anissa. Let's see. Did Jim Dingman call back in? Okay, so I'm putting that impact of the Pacifica handbooks on programmers a discussion. How much time do you want to give that?
15 minutes, and I just need it. I'm going to need a couple of minutes to email it, so I don't want to have it first on the agenda, but I'd rather not leave it at the end, but, you know, because it depends how much time, you know. I'd like to have 15 minutes for it.
Okay, so so you have it available to mail to everyone?
Yeah. I have the version that was approved by the PMB, and I'll extract, it's just a section, it's too much to, you know, it's overwhelming, but I'll extract the section that deals with programmers.
Okay. That sounds...
It won't take me that long. It'll maybe take me 5 minutes. Yeah.
Okay, so are there any other changes or additions to the agenda?
Benito.
Yes, Benito.
It's more of a question. I noticed that you've got 11 o'clock for... And I noticed that at the last meeting, last Thursday.
I'm sorry, Benito, I can't hear. I couldn't hear you.
Yeah, I'm wondering why the adjournment time was set for 11 o'clock when my understanding is that all committees normally try to end at about 10:30.
The last couple of times we did end at 11, so it has varied.
But I'm asking why.
Because we have a full agenda, so that we can get as much done as we can in the time that we have.
Catherine, so does every other committee, and the members of this, like other committees, have numerous other obligations, you know, in addition
to... Benito, would you like to change the adjournment time?
Yes, I propose 10:30.
Well,
are there any objections? Yes.
I'm going to launch one, Catherine, because we're starting 20 or 25 minutes late, so...
Okay,
we can say 10:30, we have to we'll need to extend.
Okay.
So, I would suggest anyone who needs to drop off, just summarily drop off.
That is true. You can leave if you need to. So, this is a motion to adjourn at 10:30. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was just going to say, people dropping off doesn't help. You know, if you drop off, then you're part of the meeting. The point I'm trying to make is that all typical committees that I'm aware of historically normally end at 10:30. And we have people...
Well, I understand what you're saying, Benito. We're going to take a vote on changing the adjournment to 10:30, and that will be what we're going to do for today. Okay? Grace Aaron.
Catherine, can I make a quick suggestion, if I might? It just takes 10 seconds. Would it help if we remove an item or two? Would it help if we removed an item or two from the agenda?
I don't think it will help, because... We're not going to finish the items. I have no anticipation that we'll be able to finish everything. But okay, the reason I would say not to is because it took a while to get it all in order so that we are able to present it to the PMB, and I don't want to lose track of anything.
Oh,
so I would
rather not. Okay, we can proceed.
Thank you very much. Grace Aaron, would you like to change the German time to 10:30? Yes or no?
Abstain.
Abstain. Ken Aaron?
No.
No. Catherine Davis? Well, I'll vote myself last. Benito Diaz?
Yes.
Okay. Jim Dingman?
No.
Okay. Anissa Faruqi?
No.
Steve Pride?
No.
Eric Remy?
I'm going to pass, Madam Chair, but let me just say it appears the motion has failed at this point. But
it has.
I'd like
Tom Voorhees.
Abstain.
Abstain. Okay. And Eric?
I'm going to abstain as well.
Okay. And I'm voting yes. I'm saying no. Sorry.
Okay.
So we have one, two, three, four, five no's, one yes, and three abstentions. So the motion does not pass. We're going to officially adjourn at 11. Okay, so, yes.
Yeah, the result is going to be the same, but my count is four no and two yes.
Madam Chair, I have a point of order. The motion has failed. We need to proceed.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Who are the two yeses?
Yeah, the two yeses would be Anissa and myself.
Anissa, you voted yes?
I said no.
Okay.
Oh. Okay, then I misunderstood.
All right, thank you. That was easy enough to resolve. Okay, so are there any objections to the agenda as it's been amended?
This is Ken. I'm about to send that email off. Did you just place my thing on the agenda anywhere?
Well, I have it provisionally at the top.
Oh, great. Okay, so I'm sending this off now.
But I don't think people will have a chance to really review anything. But so is there any objections to the agenda as amended?
For Benito.
Okay, hearing none. You do object. Okay, so we're going to take a roll call on the agenda.
Madam Chair, may I state my objection?
What is your objection, Benito?
It's what you said a second ago. The folks on the committee have not had an opportunity to review these changes. I mean, Ken or whoever could summarize them, but we haven't had an opportunity as a committee, to review ourselves,
Madam Chair, I object.
So we're going to have a vote on the agenda, Benito. Obviously, I believe that Ken will summarize it. I'm certainly not able to speak on it because I haven't read it. Okay, so agenda approval, Grace Aaron.
Yes.
Ken Aaron.
Yes.
Benito Diaz.
No.
Jim Dingman.
Yes.
Anissa Faruqi.
Abstain.
Okay. Steve Fry.
Yes.
Eric Remy.
I'm going to pass, Catherine, if I may.
Okay. Tom Voorhees.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to vote yes. And Eric, did you want to abstain?
I'll abstain, Catherine.
Okay, very good. So we have one no. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 yeses and 2 abstentions. So this motion carries. The agenda is passed. So, on our agenda, we have 13. No, is it 13? No, 17 actual motions. But first, Ken, are you prepared to do a summary of the handbook?
Yeah.
Okay, so we have 15 minutes for that section. Please go ahead.
Okay, so I emailed it to, you know, the Google group. I hope that gets to people. I mean, that's my only thing I have there. But anyhow, there's a section in the new approved handbook called Programmer's Guidelines. And the top section is called Payola and Plugola. And the next section is called, there's a section on indecency and obscenity, and another one of general guidelines. Those are the three basic sections. And the one that's very significant is in the Payola and Plugola. And there's a list of things to that if you or any member of your family have an ownership in either direct or indirect or other investment in stock or publicly held company, or you're an officer or director without compensation, any organization engaged in publishing of music, production, distribution, or manufacture of music tapes, CDs, DVDs, the promotion or management of persons rendering artistic or productive services in an entertainment field, the ownership of operation of one or more radio or television stations, and the wholesale or retail sale of recordings intended for public purchase. The conflict of interest must be disclosed freely and in a forthcoming manner on the acknowledgement page that ends this handbook. Any subsequent change in status to any of these items listed above must be reported in the unit general manager within 2 weeks of occurrence. So I would point out here that the PNB engaged a very professional human resources attorney, and that's why the very legalistic sounding things that I quoted there to cover all bases. So what this says is if somebody's got any kind of connection to people in the entertainment business, and it's kind of defined there, they have to disclose it on a form and submit that so that any conflict of interest which might occur will not be hidden. And now here's the killer paragraph. This is where there's going to be, I believe this should be implemented, but you're all going to be aware of the conflicts that we're going to run into. So I'll read it exactly and slowly. Pacifica employees may not direct on air, Pacifica employees may not direct listeners on air to any address, website, or telephone number for any off-site business or website in which they have a financial interest or stand to make financial gain. For example, their personal website on which they ask for donations to themselves to support their show or to ask for donations or sell other items. Now, here's the little doorway, back door out. Pacifica employees may mention when working remotely the site from which a broadcast emanates, but must not promote the venue, its products, or its services on air. So that's not a back door. That's just when you're in the field and you say, I'm a I'm at Barney's Bar, having a good time here, and we're talking about the football game. But you can't really tell people, come on down, because he's got the best beer in town. So that other paragraph, because we have a high percentage of our programmers, and unfortunately, 100% of the programmers that are paid programmers. I shouldn't say 100%. Many, you know, nearly all of the paid programmers. Say, hey, and you can go to my site 24/7, and, you know, my name is jacklondon.com, and then you can go there and you can listen to any of the stuff I'm broadcasting right here. And when you go to those sites, you'll see that they are accepting donations through Patreon or PayPal, and also sometimes they're selling products like special, it could be special medicines. Now, that's not on a paid employee, but I know we have some unpaid broadcasters who, you know, their shows are broadcast on various programs and other stations, too. But when you get to their website, they have vitamins or supplements or something like that. And so that's where you get into conflicts of interest. So what we're doing here with this motion is that's been approved by the PNB is we're restricting people's ability to advertise and send people away to go listen to their show on iTunes or TuneIn or Free Speech Radio or watch it on some other channel because it's videotaped, and it, to send business away. So it's a very strong statement, and it's also going to have to apply when we broadcast shows that we did not produce. Those people are not our employees. So that includes Democracy Now! And, of course, other programs like we used to have Smiley and West or I always forget the guy's name. Whatever program comes from outside that we're broadcasting, they're not our employees, so they're not bound or prohibited from announcing their websites unless we get them to agree to that in a separate contract. But that's this. That's the biggie here. And that's what I think we should discuss. This, let me just say one other thing. I'm trying to find this. There's another section. I guess it's not in the programmers. I don't want to take the time to hunt for it. But there's another section in the programmers in the handbook that says all work produced while as a paid employee belongs to Pacifica. You're a paid employee. The shows belong to Pacifica. And I'm paraphrasing now, so we'll have to get this in writing, review it from the handbook. There's an arrangement made. If you do sell it, Pacifica gets 50% of the revenue. And if you're not a paid employee, then you can distribute it, but you can distribute it with a common license, which means people get it, but they can't make money with it, and you can't make money with it. So that's we're putting some limitations or blinders or, you know, funneling down the activity to stop this freebie cowboy, you know, let me sell this everywhere. And it's really shocking. It's always been shocking to me because it's paid employees who are doing it the most, at least at our station. So I don't know about the other station. Now, this is, I don't expect that this, I don't even think it should go in strongly and immediately because there are special cases. So, but the point is this policy states the policy, and the policy can allow for, you can get somebody, you can make an agreement or a contract with somebody and say like, oh, we got Tom Hartman. Well, he's not an employee, so he's going to promote what he wants. But even if we have a paid employee, we might have a paid employee. Let's say we get a celebrity to do a show. And the celebrity is going to say, no, I need to be able to tell people to go to my website. And I can't have a restriction or worry about restraint in that area. So we can make an exception in that regard. And even though they're a paid employee, we can say, well, you can make three announcements or two announcements during each show, but that's the limit. And you can't, and you can, I don't know. It's show business, so you can make exceptions. This is not the military. It's not the school system. And to a degree, it's show business. So we have to be flexible. But the point is, it is now Pacifica policy that people cannot redirect listeners to listen to their shows on another venue at another location, you know, on the internet or anything. They just, they're not allowed to do it anymore. That's what I wanted to get across there. If you get to that, let me see if I could tell you, I don't think they put page numbers on this. I do not think they did. So you just have to, when you get the programmer's guide, just search for the word, when you get the handbook, search for the word programmer's guidelines. And I was just talking from the section called Payola and Plugola. And Benito was right. This stuff has to be read carefully. It's going to take a while to get people to understand it and to implement it. And it's not going to turn over like stormtroopers coming up and nailing a declaration to the wall. But it's going to have to be put in as gradiently and politely as possible. Okay, I'm done with my summary.
Great.
Catherine, may I?
Yes.
Jim, at the risk of sounding cynical, whatever, there's no such thing as an unpaid employee. You used a phrase, Pacifica. Are you talking about, are you speaking about everyone across the network, programmers across the entire network? Because you did use the word Pacifica.
I'm referring to, we have programmers that are volunteers. They come in and they do a show. They've been doing it for 20 years. But they don't get paid.
Okay, so you're referring to programmers at the five stations, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is the programmer's guidelines. This is for programmers, hosts of shows.
Okay, so what, I guess my question is, so what is, in that case, what has paid employees got to do with this?
Well, if you get a check for doing a show, you're a paid programmer. If you don't get a check for doing the show, you're an unpaid programmer. Volunteer.
This is Grace.
Oh, no, it's not a volunteer. It's a unpaid and paid. There's a definition of unpaid in the bylaws. It's like it's the amount of time you have to put in to be qualified as a member. I think it's 3 hours in a month or something. So the people who do produce shows are unpaid employees. In fact, in one of our stations...
There's no such thing as an unpaid employee. I don't...
You mean you don't like the semantics of the two words together?
Well, if you're not paid, you're not an employee.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, there you go. You got us on the grammar.
It depends on, I guess, how low it approaches. But Grace, you're next on the set.
Yes, I'd like to say that I sent Ken a draft copy of the motion that already the handbook that actually passed the PNB. What I'm going to do is. There's an updated version that actually was considered by the PNB. The one that I sent you, Ken, is a little bit different, and that's an earlier version.
Oh.
So I'm going to send everybody the most recent version that did get passed by the PNB. The personnel committee sent the PNB their draft version. I'm not on the personnel committee, but I carefully read over the whole handbook and made a couple of changes. The main change, I am on the pension plan committee, so the section on pension plans I sent to our pension plan attorney and an administrator, and the attorney made some changes in the wording, so that section was changed from the original wording that came out of the personnel committee to the preferred wording by our pension plan attorney. So that change, and then there was another change in the beginning. You can see the changes there in red. But the The version that I sent you, Ken, was a slightly earlier version, so I'm right now hitting send, and you'll all receive the version that was adopted by the PNB last Thursday evening.
Okay. Well,
is there
a change in that section, as far as you know, that Ken discussed?
No. That's the same. That's unchanged.
Okay. All right. Anyone else want to be on the stack?
Anissa for the stack.
Okay, Anissa.
Well, I honestly don't know how many paid employees we actually have at KPFT. I think it's like 12 to 15, and I believe the average what's considered small business is like 50, or that might be less. But the fact is we have such a skeleton crew, you have to count unpaid employees, or else, you know, you might as well just totally discount us altogether. I mean, that station is running on unpaid employees.
Okay. All right. So I'd like to comment as well. I could understand this dilemma, which it will be for many unpaid producers who have to find ways to support their activities. So it will probably receive some contention once everyone understands that Pacifica is claiming full ownership of their programs. And also with regard to websites, I could see this is going to be a huge change, and there probably will need to be more detail provided by either the board or management to guide producers on how to navigate it. That's my only comment.
Catherine, I have a quick point of clarification, if I might. It'll take about 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've double-checked here, going back to Jim. Webster's makes no reference to compensation under employee. It simply says someone who works for another. So I would imagine it's okay what he said.
This is Grace for the Shack. Grace for the Shack.
Okay, great.
Okay, I'm looking over this employee handbook, and, you know, it's a good question regarding whether the handbook is meant for only paid employees or paid and unpaid. However, in the section that Ken, one of the sections Ken is referring to, it states exactly, neither paid nor unpaid programmers are authorized in any way, shape, or form to offer, promise, or provide promotional services in exchange for program-specific financial support. And it goes on and defines that. So this section explicitly says that this applies to unpaid programmers as well as paid programmers. And that's, let me see what page, that's on page 17 of this document. And it'll be on the document that I just sent you all.
Okay.
I just searched with the word unpaid to find that.
Okay. So my understanding of that is that this section applies to both categories equally.
Well, at least the section under what I just read you. I didn't look at the whole thing that closely, but
okay. Okay. So I guess it would be advisable for us to read through it and see what we could offer to help the producers navigate. So, Ken, you didn't want to offer a motion with this, right? It was just a review?
No, I would be adverse to putting it forward any motion, because it's one of these things that's going to have to allow people to talk about for a while and complain and so forth. But it's going to be up to the program directors. It's going to be up to the GMs to convince to manage the program directors to inform and guide staff about implementing this. And probably, off the cuff, I'd say, you give a period of time. Like you say, within 2 weeks, you have to limit your announcements to X. And within 4 weeks, you have to stop, something like that. You know, some kind of a gradient approach. Or you may have to make exceptions in it. So it's like implementing a law about seatbelts or, 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. It's going to take a while to get participation, cooperation, and support.
Again, I have a request for information or point of information, if I may. This is Eric again. Jim, would this apply to someone who has a format, say, as Gary Knoll?
Well, I can answer that. And the answer is, I have my opinion. My opinion is, this is talking about people working for us can't do that. If we're broadcasting a package that we get in, like Gary Knoll, he's not bound by this. He's going to be bound by whatever contract we get him to agree to. You know, that's the story there. But this material does not apply. This material does not apply to all shows broadcast on our network. But if we broadcast at one point KPFT was broadcasting BBC, and that's not a violation of anything in the bylaws at all. But if the BBC gives you content, if you want to go in deliberately and edit out any of their referrals or anything, I don't even know if they allow that. They may not, but you'd have to do that. And same thing with Gary Knoll. If he wants to say drink Coca-Cola, you know, that's his show. You put it on the air. He's not bound and restricted by our guidelines, unless you get him to agree to be restricted by our guidelines.
This is Grace.
That's my opinion. That's just my opinion.
That's Grace.
Okay, Grace.
Mm-hmm. What I just said a couple of minutes ago is that in this handbook, it stipulates that the restrictions on programmers apply to both paid and unpaid programmers. So, indeed, this may apply to Gary Knoll. This has to be figured out.
Uh-huh.
This section of the handbook does not just apply to paid staff. It also says the word unpaid.
Uh-huh. This is Catherine. And then I'll go to you, Jim. Gary Knoll broadcasts live from his own studio. It's not a Pacifica program. I believe I heard Jim and Benito.
Yeah, this is, I have to agree with Catherine on this. It's been my experience over several decades that, you have a lot of live and let live on these kind of issues in the station. I'm talking now about BAI. I don't know what goes on at the other stations. But it was sort of an unwritten rule that, you have producers coming in who are unpaid staff, and, if they're doing their thing elsewhere, within reason, people would look the other way. And, so I know that this is going to be a really difficult and contentious policy to implement, certainly in New York. I don't know what it's like at PFW, KPFT, KPFK, KPFA, but I know that, a lot of people, would just do them, and of course there'd be egregious nonsense occurring. I'm not going to go on the stream and talk about what I know for sure. But at the same time, people would be flexible because people are coming in voluntarily and devoting a lot of time, usually 5 to 10 hours a week, maybe more, if they're doing a good job. If they're lazy, they'll just come in and get on the air and talk, But most of the time, most of the producers work hard, and people sort of feel like, okay, if they got to make something on the side, given their time, they'd look the other way. So I know this is going to be a tough one and a difficult one to put through a lot of guys.
Okay. Benito?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I'm confused by this discussion about exceptions and needing to make exceptions. Although I certainly understand that, you know, you got programmers ain't getting paid. I know at PFW, for instance, nobody gets paid other than there are maybe two or three at most paid staff who also have a show. But basically nobody gets paid. And so you want to give them something in a sense, or like somebody said, there's an understanding, an unwritten understanding that goes the other way. And that is true at PFW, like other stations. But my point is, either we got a policy or we ain't got a policy.
Exactly.
If the PNB thought it was so on time to approve this handbook, then he should have thought and discussed all this before it approved it and worked it out. But we got what we got. And so now we're going to have some problems. But I don't understand, like I say, this is my basic point, is I don't understand this. You know, I know we got some celebrities that got shows. Tough. You know, the same rules apply to everybody. Or should, I would think. And if they don't, then we don't have a policy. We have a half a policy for those who are not celebrities, and then who are those who are celebrities can do and continue to do what they've always done, which is what they want. So what's it going to be? Either we have a policy, are we going to have a policy, or are we not going to have a policy?
Is Ken for the clarification?
Okay, I think we're out of time for this, so this yes. will be the last comment.
Okay. Okay, on page 54, which is part of the section on programmers, it says, it says a lot of things about agreements and contracts, but it says, if no such contract is signed, said volunteers, the volunteer programmers, agree to divide any proceeds from any sale of materials, 50% to the Pacifica Foundation or the station which originally broadcast the said material, and 50% to the volunteers who created the material. So there are paragraphs in here to accommodate people who are not getting compensated by the station. And it's also a reference to the fact that there may or may not be unique contracts. However, it's time to, move up to a more professional standard instead of, like, following rules that everybody knows. And because, you know, because we're nice guys and this and that. And, people have been there for 20 years. I don't think they're there just to volunteer. They usually have some kind of an income generated from the program, directly or indirectly. And that's fine, or maybe fine, but it should be documented. Now, that's my opinion.
Oh.
Okay, so we're done. We're out of time. So I'm just saying, take a look at it, and it's on page 54, that little section I just read. Again, it's
okay.
You don't have to run in here. It would be, we don't want to jump in without really understanding what it's all covered here. That's why I wanted to get this out, put your attention on it. As a programming committee, we should be paying attention to this handbook change, which is going to have a significant influence on programming.
Okay. Now we're going to, yes.
Yes, I would like to get more input from producers in general at the different stations about this part of the policy, because I have a feeling that we get a whole different outlook from a lot of people about this. Anyway.
Hello.
Okay. All right, but then, all right. It's a little bit late for that, but yeah,
I realize
I'm sure
that.
We'll get it. I'm sure we'll get in.
All right. That's for sure.
Okay. And maybe a couple of lawsuits. Let's see. really, when you think about it, hybridization, social media integration is the next discussion. And I just want to present, because I did want to refer to a motion that was passed by the PNB in 2017. It was submitted as a recovery plan, and PNB being what it is, and I guess my not being one to get into the fray. Not much was done with this particular motion, but there's a particular part of it that I feel might be relevant. I spoke with Jim a bit earlier about this discussion on going, generating a platform. If you go to the bottom of the page, you'll see a copy of the motion that I'm referring to. And it says, what does it say? See if I could find it. It says Recovery Plan A. So the gist of this motion is that Pacifica should endeavor to have a fundraising campaign of some kind in order to put together this platform. And I highlighted in yellow the part of the motion that I would like to in some way integrate into Jim's motion, that a fundraising campaign to raise $100,000 be used to generate an online platform with the capacity to provide audio and video podcasting for producers and program directors throughout the network and affiliates, through which the Pacifica mission can be expanded and younger audiences can be reached, and through which national online fundraising can be executed. And also as part of this fundraising campaign, at the very bottom, you'll see that one of the objectives would be to hire a national director of marketing and social media to coordinate and execute online campaigns to promote the Pacifica brand and facilitate online fundraising campaigns. The reason I wanted to for us to consider this in the current motion is because from some of the comments that were made in our initial discussion, it became clear that there needs to be technology and some kind of professional guidance to be able to make this happen. It would be difficult for it to happen just by telling our existing staff that is already, in my opinion, running very thin to be able to engage in this project. So I thought it made more sense that we put forth the idea in tandem with the idea of doing an actual fundraising campaign, be it on the radio, like we do for the archives, or through various kinds of grants and donor campaigns. So I just wanted to add that to the mix. And then I guess, Jim, you can take it from here in presenting this motion.
Well, basically, the motion is something I remember last time we had a discussion about this. Maxie's objections were that he wanted to wait till we had a social media director or someone like that in 2020. My disagreement with that is that we're not talking about, you know, having, I mean, March 2019. We should have been doing these kind of things in March 2011 or March 2010. We should have been experimenting with Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google Live, all blogs, and all forms with shows. And so I would propose pushing for an implementation by June. And again, add what Kathy has brought up, or Catherine, that I think we probably need even more money than $100,000, but $100,000 is a good start. But the objective would be to start to see and not to sit there and point nagging fingers at producers, because we know some producers already integrate Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that kind of stuff in their shows. But as I have looked at the literature about how these things are blended in together throughout the country and across the world, it is a fact that if it's done properly, if you have an additional person on a show, an additional producer besides the main host, that's all that person is doing is thinking about social media. You actually increase the audience on the analog radio for that show. So that's my objective, to think of something without, you know, trying to change the content, which I certainly have my own opinion about, but reinforce the existing shows right now and creatively begin to integrate these kind of forms and start to do it with a mandate to start it, but then obviously implement and supplement it with other measures, including the ones that Catherine raises. That's my point.
Okay, Lisa on the stack.
Yes, who's on the stack? Anyone else would like to comment?
Anissa.
Anissa, yes, go ahead.
I mean, Eric is totally dead on, however, I would say we should admit it for May, because all the students are getting out of school in May.
Okay.
Although May is kind of stretching it. I'm not sure if May is feasible, but that would be a good goal.
Interns. Is that what
you're... Yes.
Okay. Does anyone else want to speak to this motion?
Benito.
This is Grace.
Benito, then Grace.
Yeah, I didn't really understand this motion, to be honest, but what I do understand is that this and all the other motions speak to a deadline of implementation of March of this year. One of them speaks about January. And now Jim referred to Joan. Now I would think that's better. But in general, I think this is too overly, these deadlines are too overly optimistic. And I would ask the makers of these motions and the committee in general, what makes you think and what proof do you have that the current staff at these stations have the capacity to do all this?
Okay.
Well, Anissa from Houston, I can tell we sure as heck can.
Hold on. Grace, was that Anissa? You want to go back on the stack?
Grace? No, but I sympathize with Benito in that, you know, a lot of us can't do it. And I was saying, definitely as Houston can't at the moment.
I didn't understand what you said, but Grace, are you there? You're next on the stack, and then we'll
get
back
I'm
to you.
I'm here.
Okay.
Yes. I think this whole motion that's being talked about should be revisited because there's been no buy-in from the general managers. The fundraising efforts that were pursued, I believe they all flopped. Doing special fundraising of this kind detracts from the fundraising that the stations do. So it has to be planned out carefully, and sometimes resolutions are not implemented because there's just resistance on the part of staff, and sometimes it's because they're unrealistic and haven't been planned out well. I think that this motion, this resolution hasn't been implemented for a number of reasons, and I think it needs to be revisited because it's not so easy type of fundraising, and it does interfere with normal station fundraising. So I'm not in favor of pushing this motion.
Right,
pushing
so just
that this resolution be implemented. Let me put it that way.
Anissa, what were you trying to say before?
No, I mean, we should... Yeah, I mean, we should have this, and it's a great resolution, but, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but KPFT is working on, you know, a wing, a prayer, and a shoestring, so a lot of stuff we won't be able to implement. It's really not feasible to implement, I should say.
Hold on a second. Okay, who was next?
Jim to the stack.
Okay. Go ahead, Jim.
These are two separate kinds of ideas. One Catherine is raising, which is I agree with in this one. I'll give you experience here in New York. We've been arguing about doing this now for 5 or 6 years. And, in fact, at one point, someone came in and was teaching Twitter to the staff. Now, there are all sorts of people in every metropolitan area, particularly New York and the Bay Area, I'm sure in L.A., I don't know about Houston, I'm sure in Washington, because I experienced training sessions in New York, where there's all sorts of social media people working for all sorts of NGOs and unions down there. And they're always coming and doing annually something in New York, which is called Organizing 2.0, and that's all they do is talk about Twitter and Facebook and how to use that as a audience multiplier. Now, obviously different stations have different capabilities in terms of doing this. One is not going to sit there and, you know, point a gun at someone to, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. However, cannot put forth this kind of integration. That is that we want to have people experiment using Facebook, integrate Twitter, not do all of it, but do what they find comfortable. And to sort of not do that, we're not talking about rocket science here. To set up a Facebook page, any Joe Schmo on the street can do that. And again, I'm not going to get into all the problems with Facebook and Twitter, all the politics of that. We all know that all too well. However, I go back. We had this, the reason why this was put on March 2019 is we basically, this motion was introduced in November. So, because there have been meetings that hadn't had quorum, or people hadn't been around, you know, we had to not talk about this. When we did talk about this last, the comment of Maxie was to sort of put it back to 2020. Now, I don't agree with that. I think we are too far behind the eight ball in all the stations, systemic-wise, to not do these kind of things, yet at the fundamental basis of it is an audience-growing tactic. That's why I'm putting forth these things, because I know... If you want to see the studies, I'll certainly lay them on you because there's no ambiguity about that in all the studies about this. When these kind of digital methods are introduced to analog radio and they're done successfully, it actually increases audience. And I can just send you to Jacobs Media
They do. They talk about this all the time and how it's applied to commercial media. If we go to any of the NPR websites, certainly WNYC is a good example of that. There are reasons why they have 45,000 people an hour listening to them, and we only have a couple hundred. So I really think that it's backwards to not move forward in introducing this. And I'm going to be a little bit of a broadcast imperialist about this. You know, this is where I get into problems with some people on the board. They don't have the background in broadcasting to make comments about this because they don't know what the hell's going on in the rest of the country and the rest of the world. And people are experimenting with these things, doing these things. We are simply behind. We're about 10 to 12 years behind. And we have to play catch-up right now. That's why I'm introducing that part of the motion as opposed to the money part, which I do think is important to do. There's no excuse anymore to be backwards on these kind of issues. We have to move forward. We have to be fair about it. We have to move forward on these kind of issues.
Hey, Madam Chair,
okay,
I'm sorry, it's a quarter of the hour. It's 9:45.
Okay, so Jim, why don't you read the motion without my addition of money? I'll just make the same speech for the next motion. But read it as it is, and we can vote it up or down.
Right,
you wanted to also change the date, right, to June 2019?
Obviously, maybe make it fall 2019. How's that? Or September 2019, is that far ahead of? I think maybe that's far.
September.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, September. Let's make it September. Whereas all the Pacifica stations have varying levels of integration in existing social media platforms, and whereas the goal is to have each show integrate social media into its on-air delivery and process of communication with its audience in order to build the show's individual footprint, and whereas all shows will need to have dedicated producers who are assigned to the task of integrating digital media into the analog shows, but it provides a means, I can rewrite that, but it provides a means to have an ongoing broadcast presence beyond simply the allocation of time on a weekly analog schedule, it will be resolved that the policy of the foundation that all analog radio shows that are currently on the air and all future ones going forward be required by September 2019 to demonstrate their integration into their on-air broadcasts of either Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google Live, blogs, or any combination of social media allows them to enhance their interaction with the listening audience. All managers and programmers will be evaluated as to the implementation of these policies. The progress of this will be reported in quarterly reports, which will start in, I guess, December 2019. This will be submitted to the PNBED and PNB Programming Committee. The implementation of this will start immediately and will be updated in September 2019 as to its progress, and then quarterly from that day on.
I have a suggestion of a slight change. Where you have dedicated producers, could we say producers or interns?
Whatever wording is satisfactory to that.
Okay. All right. So let's just go to a vote on it. And everyone can...
Catherine, I'm sorry. I have another quick question, if I might. Jim, you mentioned... I'm sorry, Catherine, may I?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Jim, you mentioned the evaluation. Who would do the evaluation?
I would say that these will be submitted. The evaluation will be done by the PNB, the ED, and the PNB Program Committee as to how these are being implemented.
Is that a change? Oh, I see.
No, that's in there.
Oh, okay. This is Ken to the stack. I'm sorry.
Who's this?
Ken to the stack. Yeah, I think it's overkill. However, I mean, I agree with the intention. I know the PNB passed a motion in 2018 requiring that all programmers integrate social networking, and that they're going to be judged or evaluated on the basis of that. But if you're setting this up so that the program committee evaluates programmers, you lost my support. You're stepping in between management and staff. You can't do that. We don't talk to programmers. We don't even talk to the program director, you know. So
first of all,
that's got to be adjusted. We can't. You can't have the programmers reporting to the programming committee.
The reports would be submitted by, maybe I could change the language, to the program director. They would come locally from the stations, and they would be submitted to the PNB ED and PNB programming committee. So the point is that we're not asking for each of these shows. The people implementing this are the ones at the stations. They're the ones who have to administer, how are you going? And we know there's lack of capacity at the station. But I'm not talking about, I don't want to know that, Joe Schmo's show doesn't have this or does have this. We want to just basically start to see, we're trying to implement this throughout the whole system. And look, the most successful shows that we have on the network, at least in New York, are all shows that have this kind of integration. Of course, they have...
No. Wait a minute. Jen, you don't have to sell... You don't have to sell social networking. I'm talking about the management.
The progress of this will be reported in quarterly reports submitted by program directors, which will start in December. So does that satisfy?
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, we're not asking to micromanage these guys. We just want to make sure something's going on.
You want a report from the program director.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Fine.
Okay. All right.
Catherine.
So,
Benito,
yes.
A little bit of a point of information.
Yes, Benito.
Could you clarify what you just said a minute ago? I'm not clear how we're leading this. Who do programmers report to? And is
the
saying that the committee evaluates these GMs and PDs?
What it's saying is the quarterly reports will be submitted by the program directors. So the programmers only speak to the program director. The program directors send a written report to the PNB, the ED, and the programming committee.
Right. But
so the same report would just be sent to three places.
No, I understand that. But this motion, my question is, this motion, just like many of the others, speak to the programming committee. I mean, when they get the report, the programming committee, the ED, and the PMB will evaluate the performance or the implementation by these local PDs?
Well, that's the question, Jim.
That's a good question.
It says all managers and programmers will be evaluated after the implementation of these policies. Do you want to say by the ED?
I'd say by the ED and the PNB. In other words, we want to make sure, look, we're not, it's not a top-down thing. We're trying to figure out how it works. Is it working? Do we have to do something different? It's not like we're the dictators of the radio airwaves and we're sort of receiving this information. It has to be a two-way street, and we have to work together to see what's working, what's not working, because what our objective is to see whether these kind of methods actually work in terms of increasing audience and actually are effective in engaging people. So, I mean, that's my intent. It's not to micromanage these guys, but to implement a broad policy and sort of make sure it's being implemented. That's all.
So based on what you said, can we say all managers and programmers will be evaluated as to their implementation of effectiveness of these policies by
that
the ED and PNB?
That sounds good.
Okay. All right.
Because it may not work. We may have to do something different.
Yeah. Okay.
Benito to the stack.
Go ahead, Benito.
Yeah, you know, I can appreciate what Jim is trying to do here. And I will take for granted that he knows what he's talking about in terms of Pacifica being behind the times. You know, I don't know about a lot of these issues, to be honest. But I think the problem here is that we're mixing apples and oranges in the sense that I don't think it's a very good idea, and I would think that that it would be a violation of the bylaws to try to, and I'm not sure about that, but I would think, to try to propose that the programming committee for the PMB is going to evaluate management. I think Catherine spoke to it a minute ago. It's one thing to say that the ED would implement or would evaluate the implementation by local GMs and PD. That's one thing. But to say that the programming committee is going to evaluate these local staff, this local management, I think contradicts the bylaw, you know. Yeah. Now, the PMB and the programming committee through the, as an arm of the PMB, can get on the ED to get him to do ABC to force, you know, these GMs and PDs to do whatever we think needs to happen. That's one thing. But I think we're stepping over the line here.
Well, Jim to the stack?
Yeah, Eric to the stack as well, if I may.
Okay, Jim, then Eric.
That's a good point, Benito. My problem is that, you know, I've watched the PNB now for, 16 years, this new PNB. And my general impression of most of them is that they have exhibited to me a lack of sophistication of knowledge of broadcasting. And this has been proven again and again with the kind of attentions they give to certain types of issues. Now, that's their business. My business is that I think we can recover ourselves with attention to, you know, different kinds of things are being done in the broadcast industry now and in our colleagues throughout the United States and the world. It has to do with increasing audience through this message. I point out WFMU with Audience Engine. They do this at that radio station, and they only raise money and sustain themselves on the Internet. Now, the reason I include the PNB Programming Committee in the mix and the PNB and the ED is, frankly, you know, it's sort of like you know, the executive branch, the legislative branch, the judicial branch. I mean, I have, you know, again, been familiar with how these things all break down in the way Pacific implements things. And I think that, you know, I'm not asking the PNB to, like, you know, be like a big authoritative, you know, willing a big shit. But I do think it's important to say, look, you know, we passed this policy. How's it working? It's on, you know, let's see how it works. And I do think, I don't see why it's violating the bylaws. All we're trying to do is to make sure that we have success. And we're not trying to, you know, the PNB, the ED, and the programming committee are part of a process, and they can be corrected too by people interacting with us more and letting us know what they think works and doesn't work. I mean, you know, we could have a whole different set of meetings after the election is over. But I just think that we have to be conscious of the fact that we have to, you know, keep in mind that we want to have a lot of double checking going on and not just have, you know, one or two people make these decisions and then, frankly, have proven in practice to be incompetent, which is what I've seen now for 15 years. I've seen general managers and program directors fired because they could not meet their financial goals. And, you know, so this is the kind of thing we have to be conscious of. Audience is where we made our money. My objective is how do we increase our audience 100, 200, 300%. That's what I'm thinking of.
Okay, Eric. And then I have a comment as well.
Yeah, thanks, Catherine. You say to Jim, everything you're doing is very, very well intended, and I don't say that in a patronizing way. I think it's slightly misguided. I think Benito has hit on something very relevant. At the end of the day, the word evaluation and used in the same sentence with a GM, that's a function of a local board. I mean, it just is. That's embedded in the bylaws there, and I don't think it's subject to interpretation. And just say quickly to your point about the fundraising, you know, here in the local area, we have 50,000 people directly employed by the federal government. Virtually every dollar we have here is tied to the federal government. As you know, these people have been without play for 3 weeks and they're playing catch up. We're going to be so far behind the eight ball here. But just getting back to what I said, evaluations, anything that has to do with an evaluation of a GM or a PD, that's to the local station. And just finally, in 3 seconds or less, I'm going to backtrack on my original position. An employee is somebody who's paid. But yeah, the dog agrees with me. That's a good point.
Okay. The comment that I wanted to make in response to including the programming committee, my experience on the PMB is that it may change, but it's been very difficult to have coherent discussions about much of anything. And it's my personal opinion that on the committee, and since this is a committee of the PMB, a lot more detail can be handled and taken care of. And for me, it's not about evaluating the people, but evaluating the policy to see if it is working, or to see what might be needed to improve it, or to decide that it's not working, and that we should think of recommending something else. So from my perspective, the purpose of the committee is to do what the PNB is unable to do, because there's so much going on at that level. So I believe that the programming committee should be part of the process. And that's my position on that. So, does anyone else have, not that we should be evaluating the producers or the program director, but the policy itself? Anyone else want to speak?
Does anyone want to make any other changes?
I heard Benito.
Madam Chair, let me just mention quickly, we can hear you screaming. Madam Chair, let me just mention Benito. Quickly. It's 10 p.m. Okay.
Okay, so we're out of time.
I'm going to leave that to you. I'm just giving you a heads up. It's 10 p.m. Eastern.
Okay, so we're all right, Benito.
I just want to say that, you know, I fully agree with a lot of what Jim has said, and I certainly agree with what Catherine just said in terms of the role of the committee. I don't think anybody would question that, but it's one thing to say that the programming committee is the proper place to deal with these type of issues. I don't think anybody argues that. The only thing that was being questioned was whether or not it is part of the role of the PMB in general and the programming committee in particular to evaluate local management.
Okay.
Or anything else. That is the problem.